Hi everyone, I'm Josh with Josh Wright Piano TV. Thanks so much for joining me today. Today I have a special episode. I have my good friend Ricky Reinhart, a national champion powerlifter and also a wonderful pianist, on to discuss a question that many of you have asked, which is, how do I safely work out as a pianist? How do I protect my joints? We're going to get into a lot of discussion about exercise and just living a healthier life and the benefits of working out as a pianist. I think we all get a little scared that we're going to strain some muscle and not be able to play, and he's going to guide us through this. Just a few things to introduce Ricky. He is a two-time national championship title holder for, is it weightlifting or powerlifting or both?
Powerlifting.
Powerlifting. Okay. He's won many state and regional championships and broke many state records. He trains both competitive lifters and just normal people like you and I, who are just looking to be healthier. He's coming out of retirement this year to break the Masters over 40 powerlifting world record. Ricky and I first met when we were performing together in Austria. It was with the University of Utah. And my mom was always like, if we ever got separated from my dad, I was 10 years old at the time, she's like, oh, let's go walk real close to Ricky and his dad, because not only are they super buff, they're black belts in karate. And he, I asked him before for clarification, and he is a fifth degree black belt in Kenpo karate and Shaodan in kendo. So super impressive. And on the piano side, he was on scholarship at the University of Utah, got a degree in piano performance, studied with Dr. Bonnie Gritton, who was the playing duo partner of my teacher, Dr. Susan Duhlmeier, two of the best teachers to ever teach in Utah. He moved to Las Vegas in 2005 and now teaches privately. He's on the board of directors for the Las Vegas Music Teachers Association, and he is the director of the National Junior Steinway Piano Competition for Southern Nevada. And at the end, we will leave his contact information. So many of you ask me, do you have good recommendations for online piano teachers? And I, on a one-on-one basis, have been recommending Ricky. And if any of you need a great online teacher, he has a few spots left in his studio. So welcome, Ricky. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is so exciting. And so let's just dive in with why we should work out as pianists. I mean, we all know that we should exercise, but is there anything specific to piano studies that you have seen a benefit with working out, whether it be the competitive nature of it, or is there anything going on to help with mental clarity? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, the thing that stands out, probably most obvious, is a structural thing with sitting at a piano. So many people have incredibly poor posture when they sit at a piano, and then they complain about back issues. And, you know, back issues generally lead to arm issues. You know, you start having upper back rounded over as we sit for hours and hours playing, and they start having pinched nerves and things like that. And when I was back in high school and stuff and practicing a million hours a day, was dealing with some of those things. And that was actually before I started working out and started lifting. And once I got into strength training, building up the musculature of my upper back to hold it straighter, to have better endurance and posture, started to alleviate some of those nerve issues I was actually having in my arms. You know, it's common to hear about having carpal tunnel problems. And sometimes I think that's misdiagnosed as pinched nerves running to the hands. You start feeling, you know, tingly or numbness in the hand, and the first thing we go to is tendons and ligaments, but often it's nerve issues. And that was the big thing I saw, was having a strong back, a strong core, your abdominals, your spinal rectors, to just be able to sit for hours without it causing pain, was the number one benefit I saw from it.
Awesome. Yeah, I've always been so impressed every time I've talked to you, because I had a little hip pain, and you knew, Ricky knows extensively about human anatomy, and he knew how to fix it right away. It's amazing. So so far as how someone could get started with working out, I think that so many of us as pianists think, oh, let's just get a, you know, go on a walk outside or get a treadmill. We don't want to do anything that's going to maybe hurt us. Maybe if you could dispel that, because I've been working out now pretty much daily for about 2.5 years. You've helped me. I have a few family members who are very knowledgeable about exercising that have helped me. And I've seen huge benefits to lifting weights, not just, you know, doing a 20-minute elliptical session, burning a few calories. And I actually have seen a difference not only in my body changing and feeling better, but also in my mental clarity. How would you recommend someone getting started working out?
That's a good question. First of all, I would recommend that people think of it as strength training, not working out. You know, I don't go to the gym to burn calories. You know, it's not to pump up the muscles or whatever. The idea is that I want to make the human organism, the whole body, stronger so that it's more resilient. And, you know, in that sense, it's about progressively getting better, getting stronger. It's not just go in and do 3 sets of this and 5 sets of that, but actually having a plan. Same as when you sit down to practice, you don't just start at the beginning of piece and play to the end over and over and over. You know, you target specific parts of the piece that needs specific work. And it's the same way when we train. So one is to think about it as strength training. You're there to make yourself more resilient. And to induce that stress, the weights have to be progressively heavier. Now, by no means do you need to be a competitive power lifter to become a better pianist. That's taking things way extreme. That was just kind of my yin and yang, you know, with the music and the weightlifting. But it also is not being afraid of big compound movements using free weights. A lot of people, they're afraid to use free weights, and justifiably so, because they don't know how. And, you know, without knowing proper technique and form, you know, it's an object that's out of control and it weighs a lot. So it's problematic. And people tend to gravitate toward machines. And not that machines are bad, they're not. But the problem with machines, especially for musicians, is that you're fixed into the range of motion of the machine. And that might not work with your body structure. You know, if you have, you know, a petite, small person that's, you know, 5'1" and their arms are much shorter than your average person, then the rotational pull on the lever arms on the machine is going to create excessive stress on the joints. If you have a very tall person with long arms and legs and levers, then it's going to create just the opposite type of stress on the joint because the machine's not big enough. And that's where free weights, barbells, dumbbells, cables, things like that, are actually much safer once you know how to use them correctly.
Awesome. Are there any movements that we should be avoiding as pianists or musicians? Because I want to open this up not only just to a pianist, but violinists, cellists. I don't know any particular problems with maybe with like the saxophone posture, but I mean, any type of like awkward, I mean, we're suspending our hands in a kind of awkward way. And we need all of these muscles and tendons and joints to remain free. Are there any movements that we should be, or exercises that you see lead, besides the machines that you just mentioned, that lead to injury, or things that really aren't going to give you a lot of return on your investment and they're too dangerous to really pursue?
Not really. The only thing that I would advise when it comes to devising a strength training program is to work your way from big to small. So you're not going to so much worry about doing wrist curls for your forearms, which is something that a pianist or a violinist or anybody should have, is strong forearms. I mean, if you think about it, a piano key weighs, what, 50 grams? It's not like it takes a whole lot of strength to push down a piano key. But what you do need to be able to do, as you mentioned, is to be very relaxed and be strong enough to hold your shoulders, to hold your back, so that the arms can be effortlessly moved. And so when I say you want to think about going from bigger to smaller, you want to think about gross motor patterns or large muscle groups as being the priority. I'm not concerned about training my biceps. I'd be more concerned about training my latissimus dorsi, you know, the muscles of my back, my trapezius, the muscles of my upper back, the deltoid complex, the shoulders and things like that, that structurally can take a lot of stress and function in a capacity with the human body to support our structures. The glutes and low back and legs are massively important. And so these are the things that I'd be more concerned about training properly. And then the little details kind of take care of themselves. But as far as actual exercises that are dangerous, you know, not really. Like I said, I don't ever do any forearm curls, but I deadlift over 600 pounds. So holding 600 pounds in my hands certainly has strengthened my forearms because I got to be able to hang on to that kind of weight.
Yeah.
Another thing in regards to being stronger is in all of the world of sports, maximal strength is the basis of every other strength quality, specifically speed. So your world-class sprinters are also massively strong. A lot of those guys squat over 600 pounds and the women aren't far behind. They're very, very strong because the maximal strength makes them faster. And this is a concept that applies to musicians is the stronger within reason. Like I said, nobody needs to be a competitive power lifter unless it's just for fun, but the stronger you are, the more effortlessly you can move. You know, the idea of being big and muscle bound is antiquated. It's not true. You know, some of the most agile people I know are also some of the most muscular people I know. And so, you know, that base of maximal strength will lead to being able to actually be more relaxed when you play.
Awesome. Yeah, I've noticed so much that I have a lot more stamina, both mentally and physically. I remember playing the Liszt Sixth Paganini Etude, a piece I'd played for many years, and I just brought it back for a little home concert. Someone had requested it, and it was very strange. I was like, oh my goodness, I can get through this a lot easier after lifting weights. And it's not that, you know, that I was like straining my biceps to play. And maybe, you know, master pianist would say, well, you've been doing it wrong then if that's easier. But I have to absolutely attest to what you just said. I've found so much benefit just in getting through big works. Also, pianos are so different. Some pianos, like you said, have, I think it was Horowitz's piano that had like a down weight of like 41 grams, and other Steinways can get up to like 65, 70 grams, not just Steinways, other pianos. You never know exactly what you're going to be playing on. If you're playing on a super stiff action, that's going to take a little more strength than having you would think, oh, well, if I can deadlift 300 pounds, I'll be able to get through my Liszt Etudes. But it's not a direct correlation, but it sure does help. So
it does. Absolutely. Yeah. And along that with, you know, a stiff piano, again, it comes back to understanding the mechanics of playing, which isn't, you know, the concept of this discussion today. But in that you're not using muscular strength per se to press the keys, but it's physics. It's actually the speed of the key going down. And so the stronger you are, therefore, the faster you can potentially be and the quicker you can actually get the key to move. And so if it's a heavier key, you know, the formula for force is mass times acceleration. So it's that acceleration portion of force that creates the volume in creating a sound on the piano. It's how quickly the key goes down, not how heavy the key goes down. You can put a 10-pound bag of sugar on the keyboard of a piano and it won't make a sound if you set it down gently, you know, but you just barely flick the key and it's going to make a very loud sound. And so it's speed and not weight.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. So far as protecting joints while we work out, are there any stretches that you like to do beforehand to kind of prime your body to prevent injury? And then I know you and I have had many discussions about different little pieces of gear, like wrist straps or whatever. Could you talk a little bit about warm up, any gear that you use to help prevent injury? Because I think injury prevention is so much easier than nursing even a small injury back to health. It's so annoying. I've injured myself before working out, and not anything with my hands. It's just lower body, and it just is so annoying to work back. So are there any things that we could be doing to warm up properly and to protect ourselves during the workouts?
Yeah, absolutely. And assuming that there's no prior injury that you're dealing with, I actually don't think you should use a whole lot of supportive equipment, because then you begin to rely upon it. A lot of people will use a weightlifting belt for squats and deadlifts, and it's not necessarily bad. In fact, you can use it as a tool to make sure that you're bracing properly. And this comes back to, knowing proper technique in the movements of how to breathe. Breathing is probably the single most important thing that I teach when I coach people, is how to breathe properly while lifting. And that's easy. Don't. Anytime you're under load, don't breathe. You should be holding your breath and bracing and trying to lock things in. Now, of course, you have to catch a breath here and there, and knowing the proper place to do that.
What is the proper place? Just curious.
Kind of the general rule I tell people is when your joints are locked is the safe time to breathe. So if you're squatting, it's when you're standing up straight.
Okay.
If you're bench pressing, it's when your elbows are locked, not when the bar's on your chest. So it's in a point where you can kind of brace and hold the load and rest is the time that you want to breathe. In a deadlift, when you've picked the bar up off of the floor, other than that very first one, you want to take a breath before you even pick it up. And then during the set, you want to breathe when you're standing up straight, not as you're bending over to touch the floor.
Gotcha.
So it's when the joints lock and they can support the load is the safest time to steal a breath. But at the same time, you still don't want to completely relax. You want to keep tension through the whole body as you do so.
Yeah, and that's such an opposite thing from piano. We're always looking for ways to release that. But I've noticed since you gave me that advice, and I think I saw it on some, I don't know if you gave me that advice or someone else, but like when you're squatting, you want a big air full, a belly full of air to like protect everything and to brace. So that was extremely helpful. Can you talk a little bit about any, like, do you wear gloves? Do you use wrist straps when you should or shouldn't?
Some other pieces of equipment. Because a powerlifting competition doesn't allow straps, I make sure that I train without them. But absolutely, you can use weightlifting straps. And you can buy them at most of your, sporting goods stores. You can find them on Amazon. And they're just a nylon or cotton type strap that wraps around the barbell so that you don't get quite so much pressure in the hand. Usually it's friction. It's more about like developing calluses and things that it helps protect a little bit. Same thing, I don't wear gloves personally because you can't wear them in competition. And so I want my hands used to what I'm doing. And I've never had an issue with that being a problem, but some people don't like ugly calloused up hands either. And so therefore gloves would be, an option. They're non-supportive. They're just helping with the abrasion of the knurling on the barbells or dumbbells. Wrist wraps. If you do have wrist problems, I would recommend not using wrist wraps unless you need them. And they're a strap that'll go around and kind of support the wrist so that it's not under too much load. The drawback of wearing some of the supportive equipment like wrist straps and knee wraps or knee sleeves is that you can actually put more force into the joint because it's slightly protected. And so, you'll end up loading the joint a little bit more because it has a tiny bit of support to it. Whereas if there's no support there, you'll shift it into the bigger joints, like the hips instead of the knee. So you just have to kind of be careful. I think, you know, light knee sleeves to keep your knees warm are great. Elbow sleeves, you know, the kind of an elbow brace. It's not a brace, but a sleeve. And so it's more for warmth and just a little bit of compression. You asked about warming up. Probably the most important thing is that you literally want to be warm. You want to break a little bit of a sweat. You know, if you've ever eaten licorice that you've just taken out of the refrigerator, it doesn't bend too well, right? And so we'll want to think of our bodies kind of the same. You want to leave it out in the sun for a little bit so it's nice and pliable. I don't believe in a whole lot of static stretching before a workout. I think that some static stretching after a workout to help, you know, reposition the joints and stuff after they've been trained is beneficial. But beforehand, there's research that shows that it actually lessens the force production of the muscles. And so, plus again, if you're stretching before actually training, you know, you're trying to bend that red vine that just came out of the fridge. So I think, you know, a specific warm-up, say you're doing, you know, a shoulder press, is to just start with light weights and do a few sets and gradually work your way into the heavier stuff and let the actual temperature of the muscle, you know, rise with it.
Awesome. Just really quick, because one thing that you personally helped me with is I kept having a right hip issue. I was doing a mixed grip on deadlifts, and I always did underhand. And I think what was happening is I may have been pulling force too much with one hand. So you had me go to double overhand, and that completely straightened out my anatomy. And I haven't had any hip issues with deadlifts, but I can't hold what I'm deadlifting, because like you've helped me get up over 300 pounds with my deadlifts on a set of six. I can't hold that just freehand, double overhand. Is it appropriate for something like that to always use a wrist strap if I'm never going to be competing, or are there?
I think it would be appropriate because the drawbacks are outweighed by the benefits.
Gotcha.
You know, if you're dealing with SI joint, that low back pain all the time because of dogmatically using an over underhand grip on the deadlift rather than sacrifice a little bit of grip strength and use a double overhand, I think it's absolutely justified to do, you know, what would lead to the greater good. Again, if you're a competitive lifter, you can't use straps. So you got to learn how to do something that way. But even myself, I'll use straps for training a lot of the time and just make sure kind of touch up work here and there to make sure my grip will hold in a competition.
And you're allowed to use mixed grip in competitions?
Yeah. Oh. And you can use what's called a hook grip. Now, don't tell any of the musicians out there about this because it's really painful, but you actually grab the thumb with the fingers around the barbell and it feels like it's going to tear your thumb off. So
yeah, I've never done that.
So all of you pianists and other musicians that need your thumbs, you might not want to use a hook grip. It is a method to hang onto a barbell with a double overhand grip.
Gotcha. Yeah, we're going off on a tangent here. I just love talking to Ricky about this stuff. Okay, perfect. So one thing I'm a huge proponent of, thanks to you and my cousin, is the home gym. Can you talk about how you would, like, let's say someone's really on a budget, but they have some space. How would you build that up? And then also, if someone doesn't have a space, say they're living in New York in a one bedroom, and they've got a little corner to work out, don't want to join a gym, they just kind of want to do it by themselves. In those two, could you walk us through those two scenarios exactly? Kind of what equipment you would obtain first, the best bang for your buck in each of those situations.
The best bang for your buck, if you're going to build a home gym, is to have a squat rack or a power cage. You can see mine behind me here, a barbell and plates. You know, 85, 90% of everything that you would absolutely need to do could be done with that. stall mats, you don't want to break your floor, so you probably want to have some decent rubber matting.
And just so everybody knows, he's talking about horse stall mats. You get them at like the Tractor Supply store, and they're amazing. So
yeah, they're awesome.
Sorry to interrupt.
In fact, I have a full gym because I train people, and the most expensive thing in my gym is the floor. But it's the whole garage, so.
Sure.
But yes, the stall mats, the rack, and a barbell, and then plates. Because and they go from, I have micro plates that start at a half a pound.
Oh, wow.
That go all the way up to 100-pound plates. So, and especially for your people that are less experienced, I actually really do recommend those micro plates that come in the, actually, I think they start at a quarter pound. I can make half pound jumps. So quarter, half, three quarters, and pound. And then your standard 2.5, 5, 10, 25, 35, 45-pound plates. And that way, on exercises that you're not terribly strong to begin with, you can make very small jumps. So it's not nearly as intimidating. You go up 2 pounds, not big 10-pound, 20-pound jumps. That would be your most basic setup, and a flat bench. But even that would be secondary. You can do things like overhead presses and even lying down on the floor and doing floor bench presses. So the bench would be secondary. So yeah, stall mats, a rack, barbell, and plates.
Perfect.
I like having a pull-up bar on the rack, and so I can do pull-ups off of that for upper back. For somebody that wants to work out but doesn't have the space for this, because it does take up, mine takes up about 7 feet of area. So it's significant. That's hard. You're going to have to really look into advanced body weight training. And the difficulty with body weight training is actually much harder than barbells and dumbbells, because the minimum weight you can use is your body weight.
Sure.
So that's really hard for a lot of exercises. Learning good squatting mechanics. So you start air squatting. You can do things like what are called Bulgarian squats or split squats, where you can put a foot up on the couch and do one-legged squats. The body part that's really difficult to train without equipment is your back. It's hard to do upper back exercises without equipment, because the only thing you can really do are pull-ups. And most people that aren't moderately experienced in working out can't do a pull-up.
Sure.
So, everybody's like, oh, it's easy, just get a pull-up bar. But, even one pull-up might be impossible to start with. So that's a tricky one. I would get more creative about finding a park or something that has jungle gym equipment, and there's a lot of public parks that have exercise equipment that are all kind of body weight type exercises. But you definitely have to do some research on body weight training, because there's a whole array of exercises that you could do. One option that's a very good option, and it's a very specific discipline, is kettlebell training. So there's a lot of people that are in phenomenal condition or very strong that really all they have are a couple of kettlebells. And they take up very little space. It looks kind of like a bowling ball with a handle on it. And there's a million different exercises that you can do. And all you need is about a living room size space, just so that you don't knock things off of the coffee table. And you can do a whole lot with a kettlebell. So, for your New York apartment, sleeping under your 9-foot piano in your loft, that would be my recommendation, is to probably look into something like kettlebell training, because it takes very little space.
Awesome. What great options. I love that. Let's just get a little more narrow here. Now, everybody, please spare us in the comments. We're going to talk a little bit about nutrition. Everybody has their opinion on what people should be doing. This is what works for Ricky. So just be kind. But maybe you can talk a little bit about some I'm just going to tell a couple things and then you add, because this all comes from you, what I'm about to say. So a while back I was saying, you know, I take my pre-workout supplement to get me going a little bit before a workout, but sometimes I'm drained like after just a few sets. And he's like, shake some salt into your pre-workout. We talked about the old Gatorade. So there was that. And like, I've never felt better throughout my workouts. I have way more stamina. I said a while ago, I stalled out with a lot of my lifts, and you're like, you need to just do a bulk, you know, eat some more calories. And I was like, oh no, I don't want to get fat, but I didn't really get fat. I ended up putting on a lot more muscle, and all my lifts went up, you know, 20 pounds on the compound lifts, like squats, deadlifts, overhead press actually went up 20 pounds, which was very surprising. So those big ones went way up. And then any advice you have on like protein or any supplements? Again, we don't have to get super into this because everyone's body is a little different and some people have sensitivities to certain things. But can you talk just a little bit about some things you enjoy using and just general advice for people wanting to progress and make progress with their working out? I know that's really broad.
Yeah, no, you mentioned the salt. That's a big one as far as ergogenic aids, you know, as supplements and stuff. Pink Himalayan sea salt is simple. You can find it at the grocery store now. Sodium is very important in muscular contraction, sodium and calcium. And this is, of course, going to go deep into biochemistry and stuff like that, which isn't the time or place, but a lot of people, just a moderate amount of deficiency in sodium, and I'm not talking in the macro sense, you know, in their whole diet, but like in the immediate prior to working out, it's not stimulatory. It's just, you just feel good all of a sudden. And so I'll put like an eighth of a teaspoon of salt in my water before I work out, you know, something, it's not a lot, but it's, you know, it certainly makes your water a little bit nasty, but it's enough that you notice it. But, you know, it's one of those things that the synapses fire quicker, and there's just a little more pop in everything that you do. That would actually be a very beneficial trick prior to performing as well, because everything that goes for working out applies to any other type of physical exertion. So
next, I didn't even think of that. That's
next time Josh is playing at Carnegie Hall, he's getting back there drinking the salt water before he goes out on stage.
Oh yeah, and have you ever used Relyte, R-E-L-Y-T-E?
I haven't. I actually learned about it from you. I haven't tried it yet.
My wife's a huge health nut, and she follows a few people online that are like pure people that like won't put a single fake thing in their body. And on one of those accounts, they mentioned Relyte, and it's not only, you know, free of any artificial stuff. It has like your sodium, magnesium, all the stuff you're referring to, these essential minerals, but it tastes really good too. It's a little weird the first time you drink it, 'cause you're like, that's a little salty, but right. It's really good. So I'm going to take that before I perform now. That's a good
idea. Next time you go to record, you'll have it with you.
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned Gatorade. Gatorade now is a drink that's just for enjoyment. You know, if you're as old as I am or older, you remember the old Gatorade that came in the glass bottles, and it tasted like salt water with slight flavor to it. It was really nasty. Nobody drank it because it tasted good, because it was actually beneficial back then, but they've reformulated and it has way more sugar and everything else. So, you know, if you do like Gatorade, I would only drink I would dilute it. I'd only drink half strength Gatorade. My quick, easy go-to is Pedialyte. You know, everybody thinks I have a sick child at home and I'm just getting ready for a powerlifting contest. I'm drinking Pedialyte, but so those are some of the tricks. As far as nutrition goes, probably the single most important thing is eat real food. You know, I mean, we could stop right there. What your definition of a proper diet, you know, there's a lot of different ideas out there. It's hard to build muscle and strength without protein. So you want to make sure that you're getting a sufficient amount of protein. Again, that's debatable how much. Probably it's more related to the amount of muscle mass that you have, how physically hard you're actually training. Just using myself as an example, so this is absolutely personal. I'm not advocating this for anybody. It's just what I do. Is I eat roughly a gram of protein per pound of body weight.
So how do you get that in personally? Like, do you supplement with protein shakes? Because you're talking about eating real food, but like pounding three whey protein shakes a day is probably not the best thing for your gut.
Right. Yeah, exactly. learn to like steak. There's two types of people in the world. There's people that eat to live and there's people that live to eat. And I'm definitely in that second category. So eating is not a problem, but you know, that's a lot of meat if you're using meat as your protein source. And so, yeah, I'll substitute a protein shake here and there. I try not to get too crazy with it. You just have to do a little bit of homework into the ingredients and find one that doesn't have a million different chemicals in it. You know, the better it tastes, probably the worse it is for you, unfortunately.
Sure. Yeah.
But then just being smart about your food choices. You know, I lived in Brazil for a while and we ate what we ate when we were there. And a lot of it was beans and rice, which I absolutely love now. You know, and it's a vegetarian source of protein. It's not a complete protein. It's not as, doesn't have as good of a amino acid profile as animal proteins, but it is pretty good. It's got a lot of protein. And then if you combine it strategically with little bits of animal protein, you know, you get a complete protein. And sure. So the other thing is digestibility. You know, how well you can stomach something. And food allergies are massive now. You know, so many people have allergies and they don't even realize it. And I'm not intentionally poking the bear here, but, you know, the people that stop for their crazy, I don't even know how to pronounce it, drink at Starbucks on their way to work or whatever. You know, there's so many sweeteners and chemicals and stuff in these things. And we just kind of don't even think about them as stuff that we're actually drinking or eating. And they really lead to a lot of problems, specifically neurological problems. So it comes back to finding those foods that you yourself are not sensitive to. I tend to eat a lot of rice because it's a very neutral food as far as carbohydrate sources. I do well on beef. I like to eat a lot of beef. It has a fantastic amino acid profile and the fatty acids, you know, especially if you're getting grass fed and things like that, are as good as anything. But also rotating foods so that you don't develop allergies is important as well. You know, if you eat the exact same thing every single day, eventually it's going to cause issues. So again, it's just, you know, without me giving specifics, it's about getting enough protein to supply what your body needs to continue to grow and advance and get stronger. And then eating foods that sit well with you personally for digestive issues. Like me personally, I don't do well with wheat. Don't get me wrong. I love all things wheat, you know, toast and butter I could live off of if it just had to do with my taste buds, but I don't do well with wheat. You know, my nose will start to run. I have kind of almost allergy-like symptoms when I eat wheat. And a lot of that is because most wheat in the United States and in most of the world now is genetically modified. And so it causes issues for a lot of people. So you just have to find what works.
Do you train any vegans?
I've had one that was a vegan. And again, it was about getting the junk food out of the diet more so than what I advocated for them to add to the diet. It was getting the non-essential stuff out.
Awesome.
I'm not an expert in vegan eating. So, you know, I gave them some guidance as to what to do as far as getting protein, I helped them a little bit with some research on finding foods that they like to combine to create whole proteins, because no vegetarian or vegan protein sources are complete, you know, that has all of the essential and non-essential amino acids. And so you have to be really, you know, really careful with combining foods to make sure you get all of the necessary amino acids. Fatty acids are huge. I personally feel that a lot of the vegetable fats are very harmful to our health. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is kind of me being a little hypocritical, because I'll also finish off my kids' chicken nuggets that were probably deep fried in some nasty vegetable oil too. So, but you know, in the big sense of it, you know, a lot of the canola oil and things like that, and soy oils and things that are just used as fillers and to cook things, you know, aren't so great for us. And we have to do a little bit of your own homework into some alternatives of those. You know, I like to use coconut oil for things. I use butter, grass-fed. The butter I use is from grass-fed cows, so it has a little bit better fatty acid profile. So it's awesome. About real food.
I like that. And that's simple. Just eat real food. Stop eating artificial things. Even supplementation. I just see so, like you mentioned, I just see so many, and I'm nowhere near as strong as Ricky is, but I can tell, like, I've switched different supplements that I've used, and I just feel like I'm on very pure supplements, like a pre-workout supplement, the Relight stuff. Like, there's nothing fake in the stuff that I take, and I can just get through my workout better. And I noticed that I've been able to memorize my music better since switching some of these things to get some of the chemicals out. It's just, it plagues our society. So very well put. Thank you so much.
Well, and one last thing on that, I think we mentioned before we started today, I watched an interview with Marc-Andre Hamelin. And he was talking about he tries not to eat about 4 hours before he performs because he suffers from brain fog. And, you know, that's one of those things where maybe a modification of the type of foods that are eaten would actually alleviate some of those problems, you know, because I get those brain fog things too. You know, we tend to have pizza night one day a week because the kids love it, but I feel horrible after eating it.
Sure.
So, you know, again, those are things that you can play with on your own and find that fuel mixture that works for you, because you should actually feel better after you eat, not worse.
What would be, in your opinion, like for you, like what would you eat before a big performance, and how far in advance would you eat, and what kinds of foods would you eat?
Probably about, I would say, like 2 hours before, an hour to 2 hours before, just so that it's had a chance to digest. Mostly protein and fat. So steak and eggs, something like that would be ideal, you know, or steak and a little bit of rice. I tend to be kind of sensitive to carbohydrates. You know, if I eat too many, I'm ready to take a nap. So.
Sure.
So, but yeah, and higher fat tends to last a little bit longer with you. And so, you know, you're not going to run out of energy mid-performance.
Awesome.
Playing the variations.
Yeah. that is not a premonition that I am working on them in. Maybe right.
The Diabelli variations instead. They're even longer.
Yeah, I remember watching Schiff. I think I told you this. I watched Andras Schiff play at Michigan, and he was playing Goldberg variations. And then the day before they announced, oh, he changed his program. It's now Goldberg variations and Diabelli variations. And then he did a 15-minute encore of another set of variations. It was a great but very long concert.
Variations afterward.
So anyway, well, thank you so much for enlightening all of us. This has been a really hot topic. I wanted to have an expert on, not just, hey, this has kind of worked for me, because I have not, I mean, I practice this stuff, but I'm always getting tweaked by you and my cousin who know what they're talking about. So I didn't want to project false information, and to have an expert on of your caliber is just wonderful. Thank you for your time. I did want to give you an opportunity to tell them where they can find you if they want either online. Well, if they're in Las Vegas, they can get live training, but yeah. Either online weight training or online piano instruction, and then any of your social media profiles if you'd like to share those, if they'd like to connect there. Because I watch, by the way, I watch Ricky's stuff all the time. It is entertaining to watch somebody, you know, lift 700 pounds in perfect form. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, you can find me on, I'm on Facebook. It's just Ricky Reinhart. I think my phone number is on my Facebook page. So if you want to text me after you find it, go ahead. My email, if anybody has questions or interested in doing anything, is Darth Reinhart, as in Darth Vader. And that is actually my middle name, believe it or not.
Oh, nice.
So it's DarthReinhart@yahoo.com.
And how do you spell Reinhart for those who are just like listening in their car?
It's R-H-I-N-E-H-A-R-T.
Perfect.
And then I'm on Instagram as well as at Darth Reinhart, just one word. And yeah, I'm on the Pro Practice Facebook page and stuff. I kind of troll that every day and get my tips from Josh and everybody else that posts there. So if anybody has questions, you know, from this video and they're interested, you know, they can tag me in something and I'll see it and respond as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And if anyone has questions, you have his email. If anyone has questions for me, my email's josh@joshwrightpiano.com, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week with another video. Thanks for joining us today, Ricky.
Yeah, thank you. That was fun.
All right. See you later.
All righty. Bye-bye.